All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Pro Photography Podcast number 213. It is Monday, May 4th, 2026. I know. Don't scold me. It's been a while, but photography's been in a weird place. I haven't been doing less photography. I've been doing more than ever in my photography, but photography's in a weird place. And today we're going to talk about the return.
Welcome to the New Web Pro Photography Podcast, where we talk about what's new, what's old, and what works for professional and enthusiast photographers. Find show notes, videos, and more at simonfx.com/podcast.
Now, for those of you listening to the audio podcast, this episode I'm actually doing live, like some of our other episodes here over on the Sime Studios YouTube channel. So if there's anything I'm mentioning as I'm going through, because I actually am working on editing today, going through some different projects, and I thought, good time to fire up. And while my mind is clear on these things, talk about the state of the photography industry as we're coming into wedding season and summer of 2026, and the world is kind of upside down in recent months. And I think that photographers are really struggling. And I think one of the big things, you know, is this kind of slump I think we're feeling. I don't know about you guys, but for me, and it's one of the reasons that I haven't been doing as many episodes the past few months, it's just kind of watching what's happening in photography. It's harder than ever to make it in photography. You have to push harder than ever. So it's weird because we have all these tools and we have all these updates to our apps and all this stuff. In fact, speaking of updates, I just last Friday launched Lumis 3, which is making luminosity masking obsolete. But this is a product for zones and selection of zones and doing better than luminosity masking edits in Photoshop actions that I've made for years. And, you know, as I was looking at these and doing these updates, and just a few months ago, I also did the Alchemist 3 actions, which are some of my most legendary actions. You know, these are actions that do really complex things in Photoshop. And I'm sitting there doing these and editing these and building these and programming and refining these to make the new versions worthy, right? And over these months, I've just been watching all this AI slop coming out and all these quote, air quotes, I'm air quoting for those of you that aren't seeing me. Photographers in the groups, suddenly they're posting these amazing images, and you go back a few months on their profiles and they're very new photographers, right? But suddenly now they're experts and they're come to their AI prompting workshop for editing. And I'm just looking at these and I'm catching hate on the groups and stuff because I try to be chill. I've been doing this for decades now. I know we all go through different phases. And so if somebody does something that's not my style, I still try to be supportive and encouraging generally. But with this AI stuff, you know, we talked about this quite a bit on the shows last year as it was really coming into force. And over the fall and up through the new year, people have been going crazy with this. Photoshop has just been peddling, just shilling AI stuff to us. Lightroom, all this generative AI, I see ads constantly from Adobe doing this, and all the, even the stock services, the stock music, the stock photography, they're all like, oh, generate with AI, generate video with AI. And my mind is just kind of like, why? I feel nothing. And I'm sure we have some listeners that maybe love AI, but you know what? I see these people in these groups, and I'll just say it. They'll post these groups. They'll take a mediocre photo of a senior portrait or a quince or a wedding, and it's just like a very, you know, like, on-camera flash, low-quality photo, bad background. And then they dump it into AI, and they make it look like absolute princess treatment, totally spectacular, castles, all this stuff. And they're like, oh, look what I've done. Come to my next AI prompting workshop. And I'm like, dude, this isn't photography. Like, this photo has no relationship to the photo you took. It's not like you're just editing. They're not related at all. You didn't do this. All the backgrounds, all the scenes, everything happening here, with the exception of your subject's face alone, is fake. And so they get offended, and I try not to fight. Like, okay, let people do their thing. But when I see this, it's difficult to really take it in and say, oh, that's art, because we're not making anything. And so I'll just be clear. I'll just say it. AI generation isn't art. And maybe I'll catch flack for that in the future. Maybe I'll have to eat crow. I don't know, but I don't think so. Because you're not making anything. You're just regurgitating what someone else has made. And we've talked about this. I don't want to belabor this too much, except for I will say that I know that any real photographer, air quoting again, because I know it's, you know, maybe I shouldn't define these things, but someone who knows how to take a camera, and this is why I love going out with analog cameras. I've been doing some videos lately. I just did a recent video on my favorite analog cameras. We'll come back to this a little bit. You know, I haven't been doing as many podcasts here on Pro Photo Show in terms of the audio podcast, but I'm regularly uploading videos. And that's part of what's happening is my energy goes into these videos. And then I don't also want to do a podcast because I'm like, do I really have anything to say? And this past month, I've been like, there's some things that need to be said. We need to talk about this AI. And we need to talk. I really want to give a warning to new photographers. Do not waste your time on AI prompting. Do not waste your time. Everybody's selling you. All this is about selling you a subscription, right? Adobe doesn't care that you're going to make things that are just regurgitated nonsense that have no artistic value, right? It might work if you're doing an ad or something like that. I know there's places that people are using AI. I have various AI chatbots on my phone, things like that. And I'll use them to do research, particularly on things I already understand, because then I know when it's hallucinating. AI essentially gaslights you in the positive sense. I don't even know if we have a word for that, but if you sit there and you talk to AI about an idea for your business or something you're working on, pretty soon it will just match pace with you and tell you you're doing great. And so it makes you think that what you're going to be doing is a great success. And so you got to be careful with that. Like, I don't script my shows. You can hear it's me talking. I don't script my videos with AI. I don't write any of my posts on the blog with AI. And that's when people are like, oh, what did you write this with AI? It's full of typos. And I'm like, oh no, I just didn't proof it good enough. If it was written with AI, it wouldn't have any typos. It would just be flawless fluff. And I think people are starting to understand this more and more. But coming back to the photography, I was going through some editing. In fact, for those of you watching on the video, and I'll link the video, by the way, in the show notes at profotoshow.com if you're listening to the audio. So if you want to go and kind of look at some of these things. But it was International Dance Day recently. And so I went to, in Central Mexico, to Tequisquiapan. And they had a bunch of dancers there. In fact, my daughter is a ballerina. So two of my daughters are, actually. So she was dancing, but there was lots of dancers there. And I've been getting quite a bit of attention to my work in the past few months, honestly, since the last podcast. And it's one of the reasons I haven't been podcasting as much, because I've been growing my networks, you know, down south here, and getting my reputation increased by really posting really good quality, like, work, going to events, editorial stuff, dancing. And I did a recent video, and I'll link it in the show notes as well, about the editorial edit and how this final edit, it's basically, you know, to get those top, not necessarily one image. I love one image for the wall, but to get those great 10 images that you're going to use in a magazine article, a publication, an Instagram post, and really getting that edit consistent, because it really does change the way people see your work. Because when they see you posting these groups of images that are coherent and consistent, they're like, oh, this person didn't just take a good photo. They know what they're doing. We might talk about that more, but I will put a link to that video, because I did a pretty good summary of the editorial edit and really how to look at your images and how to dial them in, the best of the best of your images, once your main edit's done, to get that final edit ready for publish. Okay. So I'm just making notes of all these things to add into show notes here for you guys, so that you can check it out. But anyways, I was going through and I'm editing some of these photos from International Dance Day. And I'll actually throw some up on the screen here for those of you that are seeing the live feed. And so I go through, a lot of these aren't edited yet. You know, I'm just selecting. And I was thinking, when I go to these events, and I've been forcing myself to go to a lot of events that I'm not paid for. And so I don't, you know, I've been doing, you know, things like the Miss Querétaro Association, the state, you know, pageant association will say, hey, can you come out and take some photos at our event? And if I'm available, like, if somebody's not paying me, I'm not going to, like, be booking and be like, oh yeah, that's, you know, here's what you get, etc. It's like, if I'm free, I go out and I help them out, because it builds connections. But I want to experiment. I know some photographers hate this. Like, You know, never do anything for free. I'm completely the opposite of that. I'll do stuff for free, collaborations all the time. Because if you're not using your camera, you're not growing. What I've always said to new photographers is don't give yourself away in the sense of devaluing yourself. Make your time valuable. You're not always available for everything. When you have time and you want to do something, go out. If you can help somebody or an organization or a person or an aspiring model, because you learn too. I mean, there, it's like a collaboration with a model. You get great photos for your portfolio. You get practice. When you're on a paid session, you have to photograph differently, right? And this is what a lot of the people don't talk about. They're like, oh, I'd never do anything for free. That's silly. You know, even a doctor works for free. A lawyer works for free. Of course, we should work for free sometimes and contribute. My general theory is don't undersell yourself. I would actually rather work for free than say, oh, no, I'll do it really cheap for you. Like, just give me, because the moment people pay you, now you're like their employee, right? You're working for them. So if I'm doing something as charity or as friends or something like that, it's just me enjoying myself and doing a favor for them, right? If I say, oh, I'll do it and I'll only charge you 10% of what I normally charge, now I'm devaluing my overall brand, not getting much money anyway. And even though I know it's hard to, you know, building a photography business is very tough in these times. This isn't the 90s. But I would rather work for free than undercut so that I build that reputation. And then if it's something that people really want me for and they want to hire me for, my prices are more premium. I don't want to get too much into marketing today, but doing more of this kind of stuff, just going out to community events and stuff like that has been bringing a lot of attention to my work because I have a lot of experience and I stand out. But I was thinking about how I do these events. When I go to these events, and I love it because I'm not under pressure. And so I'm in there and I'm taking photos of a dance event or a community event or something like that. And, you know, you can see, and I'm flipping through some of these for those of you that are listening to audio, and most of them aren't edited yet, but you'll see how I'll go through and I'll really be thinking. If somebody pays me to do their portraits, I'm like, oh no, I got to get their portrait. When I'm not being paid, I'm like, I'm going to get whatever I want that looks amazing. And what this does is it makes me better when I am getting paid. Because now I'm going out. And this comes back to this whole point I'm making. We're going to tie all this together, as always, with talking about AI and the fact that, you know, is it really art? I don't think so. I think it's just nonsense. It's just slop. I go out and you look at some of these, and I went behind the stage. I had backlights, you know, it's hard light. I didn't control the light because it's a public event with a crowd. And so I'm looking at the way angles are, the way street lights are coming in from behind, and how we can use those to form triangles in the composition or put them directly behind a dancer's head. You know, I'm moving with a dancer. I just posted a little video about this actually on my Instagram. I was moving with the dancers with this big street light that was kind of visible from behind the stage. And so I would move with them from behind and kind of place that light just behind their hair. So it was like they had this hair light coming from behind. Backlighting changes your photos. Everybody, you know, when we're new photographers, we think I need lots of light on their face. And the mark of a great photographer with lots of experience is they start to understand that, no, what I need is shadow. And this is what I talk about all the time in the Shadow Hackers Workshop. And the next one is coming up in a couple weeks. I'll put a link to the free Shadow Hackers Workshops as well if you want to come to the next live Shadow Hackers, because that is a game changer. Once you start shadow hacking, and it helps you to really realize the backlighting principle. Cause at first this can be hard. Like if I backlight, I have a silhouette. No, you got to kind of backlight while simultaneously mixing with your front light. Your backlight's just your dominant light and it creates drama. Again, these are things better suited for my YouTube videos because they're more example based. But I go out to these type of events and I'll say, okay, people are dancing on a stage. It's sunset. Light's fading. What do I got? This angle, they're front lit with the sunset. That's cool. I'll take some here. Switch to this angle. Okay, it's from the back. They're moving. There's a lot of clutter there. What can I do? I'd never box myself in. So I'll say, I'm in aperture priority. Oh, there's a group. I want to be at F5.6 so I don't, you know, blur out everybody. Show the group of dancers. Okay, I got that. That's good. Moving on. Let's do something creative. I'll switch around. Let's drop it. Let's go around back and go down to a low shutter speed. Low shutter speed is something I use extensively, and it draws a massive amount of attention to your work if it's done right. The difficulty with low shutter speed is that there's no one formula, because what low shutter speed to use depends entirely on the movement, the type of movement, how blurry you want it. And so I'll say, all right, I'm shooting at 250th. Things are pretty frozen. I'm going to go around back and I'm going to go down to a 60th. How does that look? Oh, it looks a little blurry, but there's not a lot of artistic-y feel. What about a 30th? What about a 20th? What about a 10th? And I'll just start moving around. I'm never leaving it to the camera. I'm exposure compensating up and down. If I'm not in manual, I'm shutter speed up, shutter speed down, switch between aperture priority, shutter priority, manual, maybe particularly if I'm using a flash because I have more control that way. So what I'm getting at here is the soul of our photos. And so you take a photo, and I'm realizing more and more, if you guys have listened to me over the years, you know that I study and teach the zone system. I studied with Kim Whitmire. I started in the film days. I mean, the Pro Photo Show podcast started in like 2008. That's pushing like 18 years ago now. Okay, so this has been a long time in coming, this stuff. Over the years, and when I really started going out and just randomly shooting more stuff, street photography, community events, things like that, not on contract, not like, oh, I have to deliver them a bunch of photos. No, I just go out and take photos that I want. And then I post those and people are like, who is this guy and why do his photos look so good? Because I'm going out without any rules. Not that we shouldn't know rules and know the technical stuff. I teach that a lot. And I'm always teaching people, learn zones, learn your exposure. But what's happening in this AI world, you know, if you've watched in recent months, I'm getting kind of tired of new stuff, the new reviews, every week there's a new lens. And I love guys like, you know, like the guys from Petapixel and stuff like that. I mean, I watch that stuff, but I'm looking at everything and it's so perfect and it's so sterile. And this is why companies like Fuji are making bank coming out with honestly kind of crappy cameras like the X half that are way overpriced. So I'm not saying go buy that, because for that price, you could buy a vintage lens and a real camera body. You could buy a film camera, something like that, right? What I'm getting at is people are craving, especially this new generation now, I guess Gen Z coming into Gen Alpha. There's this huge market for people that grew up with cell phone cameras, because I didn't as a millennial. There's a huge market for people that grew up with filters and perfect photos, and now a generation that's growing up with AI, and you don't need to hire these so-called professionals that are in these groups. Say, look, I'll come to my AI prompting workshop. Why? Why would you pay them to learn AI prompting? No one's going to hire you for that. Speaking broadly, right? Because any teenager on their cell phone can do that. They don't need you. Now, photography's hard. I know it's like the standards have gotten really high, but you know what I'm seeing happening and why I think real photography is going to come back? Is the standards have gotten so high that everything's got so perfect and over the top amazing, for lack of a better word. I mean, you see these viral landscape photos on Facebook and stuff like that. Most of the time, they're not even real. Like when there's an eclipse or northern lights or something like that anymore. Your real photos barely get any attention because the fake ones, and people don't understand yet that it's fake. They're not properly, the platforms are making lots of money like Facebook and YouTube. So they're not acting ethically and they're not saying this is fake, because they don't care as long as they got eyeballs and views, right? So they'd rather show, at this point in 2026, unethical platforms that we're stuck using, but their business practices are very unethical. They know when something's AI. They know that people are seeing fake things and being deceived by it. All they would have to do is put a little mandatory thing in the corner that says, hey, this is not real, it's AI. Here's some examples of the real Northern Lights, right? Because they're actually promoting fake science, you know, like, oh, eclipses don't look like that. Northern Lights don't look like that. This news story didn't look like that. And so we have these platforms that use buzzwords and things like fake news. And as somebody who's also been a journalist for a lot of years and an activist, that's, you know, that hits me too, because it's like they say fake news, but they don't actually use that to stop actual fakes. They use fake news for things that disagree with their values a lot of times, but for something that's genuinely, truly, and blatantly fake, they won't say a word. It'll just be shared virally, right? And so this is, there's a lot of ethical concerns here, but you know what's happening also. People aren't stupid. They're ignorant. And there's a difference. People are just figuring out that, oh, this isn't that exciting. It's not real. And so people that are putting their energy as photographers, kind of coming back to this main topic, rolling this all together, new people that are coming in saying, oh, I'm going to put my energy into AI tools and subscriptions. You're not making photos. And in a very short period of time, when everybody realizes that, and it's automatic and mandatory to say, hey, this is fake, it's not real, nobody's going to want to hire a photographer that makes everything fake. And everybody knows that their photographer did nothing real. That dress wasn't real. That location wasn't real. If you're a high school senior or a quinceañera, are you going to want that? Because pretty soon everyone's going to know. So these photos that aren't actually really photos are not actually going to have value because they cost nothing. They weren't created with value. So stop and think about that. If you don't put any value into anything, what creates art can be debated. I get that. But arguably, it's the soul that's put into it and that it captures. And so when you create something with an AI, there's very little effort. It's very low effort. It's like, you know, I put a Hot Pocket in the microwave, but I sprinkled chocolate spring sauce across the plate. Now I'm a chef. No, you're not. You put a Hot Pocket in the microwave. I mean, at least you know how to turn the microwave on. That's prompting is the equivalent of knowing how to put something in the microwave on, put 2 minutes in, and press start. Let's be honest. And as these AI algorithms develop, like, it doesn't even matter if you prompt right or wrong. You just kind of shuffle some prompts through until you get what you want. So I take this to a pretty extreme state. None of my photos, and I'm very clear about this, I don't, like, you know, go ranting and fighting with everybody all the time, but on my profiles, like on my Instagram, it says no AI. And I stick to that. Now, I don't mean AI, like AI masks for selections and Photoshop of the subject or the background so you can save time and not just be doing hacky selections that are slow. I mean, if you've used the new Lumist that I just finished, you can select zones, you can select subjects, you can select backgrounds, but you're doing everything. You're building layers and stacks. Lumis is just making this process that would normally be complex incredibly easy. If you see my videos on doing speed masking, like I do with my elegant speed mask presets and like I teach you guys to do if you want to make your own in my videos. And speaking of that, I'll make a note to put a link to speed masking. And what is that? It's, you know, you're stacking 3, 4, 5, 10 layers using these layers in Lightroom, and now in Capture One as well, we have them, where you can select subject and do a little softening here. You can select the eyes and, you know, make those a little bit brighter, things like that. But you're applying real edits to those. That's my line. I manually clone and do healing brush still. Even if I'm taking out trash, I don't use generative fill. I do it by hand and paint it in as needed using a clone brush, using a healing brush, but not an AI generative one. I wish, you know, Adobe's just raised the prices. They're charging people more and more. They charge more and then include all these AI features that then you have to pay more for again if you use them. All this is a subscription trap. I probably can't say scam because you know what you're getting, but really they're just manipulating people to make billions at this point. And so what they're doing is places like Adobe have really pushed AI in the past year or so. They're promoting the idea that you're an artist by using someone else's art to create your art automatically. All you have to do is pay them. So what Adobe and companies like them are doing is, you know, and this is happening in music too. They're basically saying your art requires no effort or soul. It just requires money. You see what's happening here? And so I know we could get all, you know, artsy, serious, and, you know, talk about the ethics of this. But even as from a professional level, people will not value this. In a very short time, people are going to start demanding to know if things are real. And so we already have things like, integrated into Lightroom and Photoshop, like content credentials and things like that. But that has to go further because you can't be making things that are fake, pretending they're real. You can make things that are fake as long as you're honest about it. When you make things that are fake and pretend they're real, that's fraud. And so fraud in art is a thing that's been existed for a long time in lots of different mediums. There's always somebody trying to do something fraudulent to make money in art, whether it's paintings, whether it's forgeries. But to me, generating something with AI is very little different than a forgery. The difference is you've just paid from a license to a massive corporation who's selling the forgeries. So because they're licensed forgeries, they're okay. But if you're still pretending they're your art, we have a problem. Now, where's that line drawn? I know we could fight about that, and that's not really what I'm about here today. You know, people might say, well, is it a forgery if I change the sky? Well, I've never swapped skies out for generic skies. If I want to fix my sky, I mean, take Lumist, right? If you go, if you know, I have a sky tools in Lumist. I have sky tools in Elegance, Speed Masks. I go into Lumist. I'll use the Sky Painter. And then I can instantly isolate that using the selection tools in Lumist. And then I can adjust, you know, it does natural recovery of my highlights and maybe puts a few pixel painting layers over. But they're real layers. It's not taking anyone else's concept and just stacking it on, right? So no, I don't replace skies. I don't paint my clouds in. If I take a photo of a landscape, it's a real landscape. Will I maybe remove a piece of trash? Yes, but I try to remind myself, if possible, to take a bag and go pick up the trash instead before I take the photo. Will I remove a power line? Yeah, sometimes. I try to compose it so it's either part of the scene or out of the scene. In a portrait, will I do a little bit more? Yes. If I'm editing a portrait, my focus isn't having a perfect background that's kind of blurred out, right? If I erase a rock that was in the river, that doesn't bother me. But even then, I don't personally, this is me, I don't use generative fills. I don't want anybody else's image in my image. None. And so I'm not saying like, hey, if you remove a piece of trash with AI generative remove, that you're no longer a photographer. But I will go as far to say as if you're taking snapshots, making them absolutely spectacular, backgrounds, dresses, everything fake with AI, that's not photography. And you're not creating art, and AI is creating your art. And frankly, better to stick with your mediocre snapshot photo, because at least in 20 years, that's going to have value. Think about this. When you go back, and I've noticed this a lot too, and this goes back to what I was talking about with the dance photos that I was working on today, as I was going through these, really thinking about some of these are imperfect. And I get this a lot when I use vintage lenses and stuff too, like, oh, that's imperfect, right? But I'm seeing motion. Oh, look, their hands are blurring, their hair is whipping around, and it's blurry, and their face isn't that clear. And I'm like, but this has way more feeling than the perfect sharp one I did with the G Master lens. Why? Well, because we're in a world where perfect is actually easy. It's things with feeling that represent people's lives and that have soul. That's what's hard, right? The movement of a belly dancer on stage and the way the light's backlighting the fabrics and they're spinning around. And so I turn down the shutter speed like here to 20th, 30th of a second, and they're not very clear, but there's this ghostly movement to the white fabric that's whipping around. And I'll throw a few of these references in the show notes over at profotoshow.com as well. But I think you guys know what I'm talking about. This is, again, going back. I'm weaving these different topics together. I'm weaving kind of three topics together. One, AI, art, and ethics. Two, business side of, like, you know, what should you take photos of and how should you publish them and for how much? A little bit here. And three, the creative side of where the technology of a great lens, a great sensor meets the rudimentary beauty of just saying, no, I don't care about that. I like that blurry swirl to the dress, even though the face isn't that clear, because I feel something. And going back to the point I just made, I'm not just leaving all these threads loose for you guys. That snapshot, right? Remember the guy we talked about that took a kind of mediocre snapshot of a quinceañera, and then he faked it all in AI and he posted this amazing thing and said, come to my AI editing workshop. We all know those guys. They're all over our groups right now in Facebook and things like that. And they're supposed to be photo groups, but I'm like, how's this photography? That mediocre photo he took in 20 years will actually have value to that girl. The faked AI one will be like, ew, that was, remember the AI days when we faked everything? It's going to be cringe. Can I say that? Is it cringe to say cringe? And so, but think about this for a second. And I've started telling them, like, you know, they'll do these. Sometimes it's just completely fake stuff they're posting. But sometimes they'll post this before and after. And I'm like, you didn't edit that. You faked that with AI. If you had edited that and you had painted in details and done compositing and really used skill, that would be different. You didn't. It's just fake. A portrait can be retouched. But even on a portrait, this is what I'm seeing. This goes back to coming back to real photography. I know people are going to be using AI and stuff for their ads and their videos and their generic stuff. So where do we focus? On things that are important. On journalism, street photography, moments, people, weddings, quinceañeras, portraits, grandmas, families, anniversaries. Things that are real. Because people are very soon going to see that everything's being faked and want it real. The crappy quince photo 20 years from now, that girl's going to look back on and said, oh, look how young I was, right? She's not going to think about how, oh man, that lighting was funky. And I would wager that of the two, she's going to value the crappy snapshot from her friend that the photographer sent versus the fake AI one that he made, that he wanted to sell a wall portrait of. Now, I'm not saying make the photos crappy. No, I'm going to go out and make a portrait that's real and also beautiful and then make a wall portrait of it. But what I'm saying is, do you see this connect? I want you to think about your own family, your own photos. I want you to think about when you look back, because I go back in the archives now and I find photos because Lightroom's been around for that long. I'm now looking at photos. My kids are becoming adults, right? I go back in the archives. My parents are not as young as they were. I go back in the archives. I'm seeing photos from 15, 20 years ago or more even in my archives, and they're all there still. Yeah, I back them up. And I'm like, wow, I feel something. Like, I'll look at it and be like, oh, I don't know if I'd post that on my Instagram. It's not that great of a photo. I didn't take, it was a snapshot, but I feel something. And so I think we do, what I started realizing is we need to merge the feeling that we get of just a good moment, which we often capture with a phone, a snapshot, things like that. We used to capture it with mom's 35 millimeter camera that she had in her purse. We need to remember that feeling. And that's what I've started doing when I go out and do these photos. Yes, I know that I'm going to do an edit and then an editorial edit and publish the 10 best photos from the International Day of Dance that represent them. And people are going to say, wow, those are really good photos this guy took. Who's he? Right? I know how to do that. But as I'm doing that, I'm not just looking for the perfect photos. I'm looking for the ones that, no, they're not snapshots, but they have that feeling. They have that raw, natural energy. So what I'm telling you, especially for new photographers, is not, hey, don't learn photography. The opposite. I'm saying really learn photography. Learn it really well. Learn the techniques, not the AI editing. Because investing in that is not going to make you a photographer. Invest in doing creative things in the camera. Invest in doing good edits in post-production, whether it's Photoshop or Lightroom or Capture One or whatever you're using. But building layers and mixing tones. Just like in the darkroom days, the masters would burn and dodge and stack and retouch with dyes on negatives and things like that. They would improve their images, and that's fine. You can decide where your limit is, but make them real. Make people feel something. Make them go, wow, that's really good. And also, that photo reflects what I felt when I was dancing. They don't even have to say this. You're going to be able to see it on their faces and how they respond to your photos. This is why so many of the photos I post, you know, I'll go into pictorialist actions and I'll add grain and I'll add softness, like David Hamilton's looks and things like that. And I study the master painters and the photographers from the film days and stuff all the time. And in a world where it's like, oh, look, we have AI noise reduction. Okay, that's good, right? I mean, that's fine. That's still your photo. But if I go out with my Nikon full frame, things are really clean, really good. And I'm like, okay, but I want some smearing in the bokeh. I want some movement from the shutter speed. I'm going to put on this vintage lens, even though it focuses slower, because it's just going to have a little different feel that doesn't feel like the sterile photos people are seeing today. I'll take out the Micro Four Thirds, the Panasonic or the Olympus, and I'll go out and be like, oh, these are going to be kind of noisy. And I might say, all right, if they're above 3200, I'm going to go ahead and put a little noise reduction on them. But I'm still coming back in and putting a Portra 400 grain on the outset of them because I want a little bit of that soft organic feel to it. That's just not overdone, right? So you see this a lot in my entities videos. This is why all the products I'm making, even though as a content creator as well, because I was making presets before the first version of Lightroom, right? I was the first guy with Power Workflow. This was what, 2007, 2008? Powerflow was the first like commercially promoted pack of presets. Now everybody's selling all this slop that they make. Most of it is not very well thought out and crafted. But if I make a pack of presets or actions, I'm not trying to say, hey, buy these and get my style. I'm spending hundreds of hours experimenting and saying, okay, how can we make something no matter what me or Joe or you or Sally or Frank or Cindy's editing, it's going to be a tool that doesn't just make us edit faster, it makes us see different. This is why I get so excited about things like Lumist. If you watched the recent Lumist video on the launch last week, is I'm saying, no, it's not just about editing tone. It's about something that you don't get from these luminosity masking, things like that. It's this live map of zones. And if you're watching on the video, you know, if we load up a image and you edit in Photoshop, and I tell people a lot because everybody's all stuck in the raw edit now. Oh, we got layers. You can do so much in Capture One and Lightroom. I don't need to go to Photoshop. Yeah, you do. If you want those best images to be the best. Now you can use other apps, but unfortunately, as I show on a lot of the reviews on the video side of the channel, you know, apps like DxO and stuff like that, they're still not competing. And believe me, it pisses me off because I was just ranting against Adobe. I really want there to be some real competition that can rival Adobe. Just like in the video editing world, Resolve has arguably become a better option than Premiere. And it's free for almost everything you need to do, right? It's great. And so Premiere Pro is not that, is near as relevant anymore. You're not stuck on Adobe. But in the photo world, we don't have anything like that. Heck, it doesn't even have to be free. Most of these other apps, you know, like DxO and On1, they're charging as much or more, even though technically you might be able to get a perpetual license. In reality, you pay as much or more, even after Adobe's price increases, which suck. And so it's getting really over the top. And the competition is basically also saying, look, we did something, but really they're just trying to rope you into a subscription as well. And so if I go in, you know, if you look at this landscape here and I run Lumist on it, the ability to have these live zones. I'm telling people, look, you can edit tones whatever way you want. But if you look at the way how when I change something, there's numbers now on the Lumist map that in real time, in every sector of the image, it's showing you what zone that's in. Being able to look at that and say, okay, these are my zones, doesn't just help me edit now. It helps me understand tonality better. So it helps me make better photos the next time I go out. I will often go into Lumist, even if I don't need to edit select zones and do, quote, luminosity masking. Although Lumist does a lot more than that. But I'll just go in and fire up the map just to analyze in my own mind what's happening with the light in that scene. When you know that feeling when you get a photo and it comes out great and you're like, why? Go in and look at the zones of it. Look at a zone overlay map. And frankly, I mean, some of the other luminosity masking panels and stuff, since I introduced Lumist years ago and did the Exposed workshop and it won the Hot One Award, I had a mission of bringing zones into digital and more mainstream. And that's happened. I think I was instrumental in that, at least in part. And I know that since Lumist came out, some of the luminosity masking panels and stuff like that have introduced zone selection tools and stuff like that. And all that's great. It's good that we're moving forward, especially in all this AI noise, that people are doing real things. But one of the big things for me was always like, no, I don't just want to select highlights, midtones, or shadows, or zone 1, 2, 3, or 4. I want to be able to see those zones, a color-coded map of those zones, so I understand better when I go out and use the camera next time. And I don't think a lot of people, it was kind of this weird side effect that came out of Lumist, is the ability to see light and shadow better. Even though originally the idea of Lumist, and still is to be able to edit the zones, I just love looking at them. I love seeing what's happening with the tone. And so there's very few ways to do that. It's honestly kind of sad that hasn't been implemented in camera. You know, we have highlight clipping and shadow clipping indicators in camera, but you can't turn on a map that shows you middle gray and all your zones. So you're actually kind of seeing the whole thing in this color-coded view. Yeah, you need to see your scene. You need to have the feeling and the soul of your scene, like we just talked about. But what I'm getting at is, it's simple things like this, like being able to see, understand zones and tones and shadows better, like I'm always teaching here on the channel. It's things like that that really make you understand and kind of make your photography, the technical aspects of your photography, second nature, so that you really focus on the creative aspects of your photography. And for a lot of the new generation of photographers, they're never going to learn photography. And most of them will, most of these people that are coming into photography with, I'm going to go to an AI course, I'm going to edit with an AI. I think feel pretty safe in saying they won't be in the business for long. because there's going to be no inherent value to creating this AI slot. You're not creating anything. I don't even like to use the word creating because it's a computer algorithm creating it from what? From other people's work. And this is I think some people don't understand. AI models are not being creative, right? These are not, they're not thinking, they're not creative. They can be fascinating. It's kind of amazing. You know, you talk to a chatbot, how much information you can get, some of it accurate, some of it not. But it's really important to understand that if you use like open source image generation AI and you go to sites like Civit or something like that, you download model packs, right? It's like, oh, this is a model for making portraits. Here's a headshot model pack. And these are basically, you know, 5 gigabyte packs that have all this data that the model has hashed. Basically, it's thousands of images, and then it steals from all these images to make your AI-generated image. So you have to understand that you say, oh, well, people can learn too. They see lots of images, and then they create something similar. That's how we learn. That's not how AI learned. AI didn't just go through one day and look at things and then enter things into its consciousness. It's an actual file of images that it's pulling things from, mashing them all together and creating an image. There's no creativity involved. The AI model isn't creative and your creativity isn't there either. Because all you're doing is you have like a concept. That's like if I say, I really love the idea of creating a starship that can travel at warp speed so we can explore the entire galaxy outside our solar system. And then saying, well, if someday that's invented, I say, oh, that was my idea. I created that. No, somebody else had to do that because I didn't know how, right? And it's the same with a photo. When you generate an AI photo, it's really important to understand, even if you do like generative fill to remove a tree, it's pulling data from other people's photos and other people's work of, oh, blank sky should be here. Let's pull in blank sky. And that's the difference between something like an AI model and a healing brush or a clone stamp, where it's saying, hey, he wants to clone this. What's surrounding it? And how do we erase what he's selecting and then kind of blend it together, right? Where a clone stamp, you really do it manually. I have a workshop that might even still be on the site, but I know most people don't learn cloning manually anymore. But there's actually one of my old workshops called Cloning Magic where I showed how to manually clone things and get them really good. This is before any of this automatic stuff existed. But what my point is here is understand the difference. In one, you have to think, process, and create something real. You're painting, essentially. It's digital, but you're painting, right? And this is why even compositing a sky, while I don't do it, because it doesn't represent that real scene, a real landscape, right? Because that's usually where people do it. Like, oh, I have this beautiful landscape, but the sky sucks. I'm going to fake the sky. Well, the sun wasn't in that position. The clouds weren't there. The weather wasn't like that day. So I don't really feel it because it doesn't feel real to me. But at least you had to cut it out and put something real in. Now we've gotten to the point where a lot of people are saying, no, we don't have to do any effort. It's no effort art. You just type a little and you watch things happen. Why? Well, because they were created from someone else's work. We're seeing it with music. We're seeing it with writing. Do you really want to read a novel that was regurgitated from a million other novels that real people wrote, and now somebody's selling you a novel that took them basically no effort, they just had to compile it, and it was written automatically? I don't, because there's no soul. Things created by us as human beings are kind of the definition of human art. Not created by machines, it's art. We made something. We made something beautiful. And this, again, just to tie everything together, goes back to what I was saying with, you know, these dance photos and things like that, where I'm thinking about, look at how that's backlighting. Look at that light behind them. Let's make a triangle with this dancer and that light over there so it has a compositional feel to it. Let's slow down the shutter speed. Okay, that's cool, but I'm going to slow it down more and see what happens. So we're at a 30. What happens if I do a 15? There's this active process when I go out and I'm just shooting events and taking photos where I'm creating. And a lot of those photos, when I'm in that creative mood, do not come out. They don't see the light of day. And yet every time I do them, I get the ones I need. I get these photos. And because I'm doing that way, instead of just using auto, instead of playing it safe, this is why the communities and the, you know, the town mayors and stuff like that are sharing these photos and people are talking about them, because they're distinct. You know, and you look at someone like Ansel Adams, you look at someone like Stieglitz, you look at someone like Steve McCurry. This is what they were doing. it's these beautiful scenes taken on, let's say, Kodachrome with Steve McCurry. And technically, they're very good, but they're not powerful because they're technically good. They have this lush beauty to them that's like, wow. But they're powerful because you feel something. If a photo doesn't make you feel, and this goes back to something that I plan to do some new videos on and I've mentioned in recent shows and stuff, is a photo doesn't tell a story. That's a misnomer. A wedding album might tell a story. But we've been taught this idea all our life. Oh, what does your photo? You know, if you go to your local photo group or there's an expert trying to tell you what's wrong with your photo, well, it doesn't tell a story. What story are you trying to tell? What story? I'm like, I'm not trying to tell a story. And it took me a long time to realize this. Just in recent years, it really clicked with me that, like, I'm not telling stories. I'm making you curious. I'm making you feel something. I'm making you uncertain. You know, if you think about a news story, iconic war photos, things like that, they don't tell the story. They make you want to hear the story. What happened to that person? Well, why was that happening? How did we let that happen? Right? You see a beautiful photo. Where is that? How is that mist so beautiful at the sunrise? Like, what's going on? How was it cold? Was it hot? It's just gorgeous. I want to be there, right? A portrait of a dancer. Like, what kind of dance is that? What is that fabric? Those lights look amazing. You're making them ask questions. If you really want people to pay attention to your photos, leave them with more questions than they came with. A series of photos, an editorial, you can tell a story with that. You know, in a movie, one shot, the trailer doesn't tell the story, right? That's the single photo version of a movie. The story is the entire movie combined. It's all the shots together. It's an album. A photo doesn't tell a story. A photo makes you want to hear more of the story. And I think if we think about that, and I'm actually going to do a video about this on the channel soon that's specifically on this. But if you start thinking about your photos in terms of shadow, feeling, soul, not fakery, but real, even if imperfect, and then you say, this is real, but imperfect, but how could I make it better? How could I make it more perfect? How could I bring the three-dimensional world into the two-dimensional so you feel the depth? So don't just use like, oh, imperfect is okay as an excuse to say, my photos are mediocre, because that won't work out either in a world where standards are very high and you're competing with the perfection of AI. You need to combine that feeling of natural imperfection with skill and knowing the technical elements of how great photos are created, how shadows used, and creating photos that leave people wanting more, I think, is one of the biggest secrets. You guys let me know what you think in the comments of the video or in the show notes over at profotoshow.com, or send me an email, profotoshow@gmail.com. I think we've covered this enough. And my ultimate closing thoughts here is, and I've alluded this throughout the whole show today, and it's why I wanted to bring this up. Real photography is coming back because people are realizing that everything is fake and they're tired of it. Everything's fake. It's not art you're buying. It's a subscription to generate art. How does that make us feel? Do we feel anything? Is there soul? It's not even real people. It's just generated. Oh, but pay the subscription, right? Everything's fake. You bought a premium car. You bought a premium BMW. Now, for $19.99 a month, you can use the already installed heated seats. Oh, you bought a stove, but you can't do this because it's not connected to the internet and validating with the server. You can't open the sunroof on your car because the company that made the sunroof went out of business and it can't function unless it's connected to the network. Everything that's being made and sold, if you look at marketing and things that are happening, not just in photography, but across the entire world, we're being sold control and manipulation and fakery. And what's it gonna do? It's gonna make us happier, not happier. It's gonna make us safer, more war. It's going to make us less crime, more crime. It's going to make people feel healthier, more sickness. Because they're turning everything that should be real into something to sell you a subscription to. And I think if you literally look to the root of AI, most great innovation, sure, people wanted to make a living by selling a new invention. The camera, let's say. But most great innovations throughout history were made to genuinely make the world, make art, make food production, make transportation better. right? You're investing in something that will generally make your life higher quality. If you think about AI, it's really doing nothing to make your life higher quality. Sure, you have a chatbot, and sometimes it's fun to ask questions of it. And sometimes you get gaslit and actually bad information that makes you arguably dumber, right? So if you go back just like 2 years before any of us were using chatbots, I mean, you had Siri, but it was super dumb. Just 2 years, were you worse off? Were you worse off 2-3 years ago before you'd even heard about AI-generated images? Right? We still had Photoshop. Now everything's a subscription, a plan, it's credits, everything, constantly, everywhere. And so I think there's a bigger picture here. This even goes into things, you know, that you see famous activist YouTubers like Lewis Rasmussen talking about of you never own software, you don't own your cars, you don't own your stoves, your fridges, right to repair, things like that. And that's not the point of this show. Just think about what's happening. Look at what Adobe and all these subscription services are doing. They're luring us into a sense, in the case of us, of creativity and artisticness. But they're not actually helping us make art. They just want to make sure we're paying every month or it'll no longer work. I'm Gavin Syme. This is the Pro Photography Podcast. And I just thought we kind of needed to talk about this. So I did. I hope you guys found this episode interesting. Let me know what you want to talk about here on the Pro Photo Show. Maybe we can get some guests on soon and get some other episodes out. And hopefully this live format worked good and we'll do more of that, because honestly, it does make it a little more efficient for me in terms of getting the content out. And well, I'll have this on the feed soon, and we'll see you guys, or hear you guys,